Well, our environment is so complex, and wetlands are part of that complex environment and play a crucial element in our ecosystems. They can be very fragile. There's some good news. You can help preserve them. That's one good thing. Larry Mueller here again. Thanks for joining us today as we have two special guests who really work hard to protect and appreciate our Wisconsin wetlands. Katie Belfus here again from the Wisconsin Wetlands Association to talk about, among other things, the recent winners of the Wetlands Awards and what they're doing to manage the state's wetlands. And Katie, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me. It's always fun.
Jessica Strand with us by phone today. Jessica is the wetland specialist from the Bad River Tribe's Natural Resources Departments, and she's from one of the groups being honored by with a Wetlands Award from the Wisconsin Wetlands Association. And Jessica, thank you so much for taking time to be with us.
Oh, thank you for inviting me to participate.
Ah, it's a lot of fun, and we always have a good time when we talk with Katie, and I'm looking forward to hearing about you and your group as well. And as for listeners, as you join in, have a question about wetlands, are you aware of wetlands in your area and how to protect them? Maybe what concerns do you have? Give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. And Katie, we start every show, I think, this way, but let's do it again, starting with the basics. What makes an area a wetland?
Always a great question. It's always important to start at the beginning. Wetlands are determined by three factors, primarily the type of soil that's underlying the wetland, the presence of certain kind of indicator plant species that grow under wetland conditions, and the presence of water at or near the surface of the soil for all or some of the year. And that's some pretty important qualifications because not all wetlands are wet all the time. And not all wetlands need to have open water to be considered wetlands. We have a wide variety of wetlands in Wisconsin. Some have trees, some have shrubs, some look more like prairie. Some are open water and have some of the creatures that we think about, herons and geese and ducks. And those are wonderful wetlands. And we have lots of wetlands where you wouldn't see open water or water birds, but they all provide super important services both to us as people and to nature and to wildlife.
And Jessica, let me turn to you for a minute. You're a wetland specialist with the Bad River Tribe's Natural Resources Department. Talk about your work.
Well, as the wetland specialist for the tribe, I work on protecting the tribe's water resources, including management and rehabilitation of wetlands on the reservation. And including the Bad River watershed too.
So you got a pretty big area to deal with there.
Yeah, we really do.
I'm trying to think of how many thousand acres that would be included, but I have no idea off the top of my head how much land would be included in there. But wetlands affect it's important that we have people. A lot of people involved in trying to protect our wetlands, and why? How do they affect our environment?
They're super important for so many reasons. In fact, when you look sort of dollar for dollar, for lack of a better metaphor, at what support different natural systems provide to us, the woodlands, the prairies, the whatnot, wetlands generally rank among the very highest in terms of the value that they provide to us. They're excellent at holding water and releasing it slowly, so helping level out the water flows. We get a lot of water in the spring from snowmelt and spring rains. They help temper those flood, that pulse of water, and hold on to that and then let the water go slowly over the summer. They're really great at holding on to flood water and storm water when we have wetlands in those in areas where that's an issue. And super important for cleaning our groundwater as water filters through the wetlands and down into the replenishing and cleaning water that gets into our lakes, rivers, and streams. And we all love wildlife, and we can't have something like 75% of the wildlife we have in Wisconsin depends on wetlands at some point in their life cycle. Maybe not their whole life. They might not spend their whole life in wetlands, but they maybe need to raise their babies there. If they don't have a wetland for raising their babies, we're not going to see that population in the long term.
And, you know, as you were talking and talking about the role of wetlands in preventing flooding, I was thinking about, yeah, and when they're not there,
Well, when they're not there, we feel it, and it takes some time. It's a combination of the increase in impervious surfaces, parking lots, roads, roofs, whatnot, land that doesn't absorb water, increasing that amount of area on our landscape and decreasing the amount of wetlands. We don't see it right away. But boy, it sure adds up quick, and there's lots of communities that have seen the impact of that. So there's lots of communities that are reengaging and saying, hey, rather than spend a bunch of money on hard structure, infrastructure, pipes and whatnot, let's look to nature and see what she does to help protect us from flooding. Let's try and bring some of that back, protect the wetlands we have and restore some that we've lost in order to bring back some of those really important services.
And Jessica, in your area, the areas that you manage, what are the biggest problem areas that you are, or things that you really look out for?
Well, agriculture up here is not as prevalent as down in southern Wisconsin, but it does affect the water resources on the reservation. And then also just individual projects, whether smaller residential projects or larger ones like the potential mine or even the potential CAFO in Bayfield County.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So we work on reviewing projects like that to make sure that the best science is used in the review process.
Well, and I think Jessica's got they're responsible for the area within the reservation, but water is connected. Water doesn't obey boundaries, right? And so things that go on in the watershed around where the reservation is located will have a profound impact on the health of that water, the water in that reservation boundary and the watershed. So I think what Jessica's point here about bringing together and seeing what the impacts are and looking at the science, making sure the science mm-hmm. is there and applying the best available science to understand what the impacts of some of the decisions happening in the broader watershed area are going to have on the natural resources that her department is in charge of.
And here we had a call from John, who couldn't hang on, but from Menominee area, and wonders about the effects of frac sand mining where there are wetlands.
Well, certainly we've heard stories of impacts of that, both when there's spill events or water. You know, there was a reservoir that broke and flooded into a wetland with some water quality issue concerns. But I think the jury is still, the science is being collected, and we're needing to build the case to understand what those impacts are, because it is such a new industry. We're learning what those impacts are. It's a little bit, it's concerning to me that we can develop an industry before we have the science to understand what the impacts are going to be. It's challenging to be building that science while the industry is developing. So we need to keep, as Jessica pointed out, we need to keep going back to the science to tell us if our decisions are going to be right for the long term of our planet.
Yeah, absolutely. And let me let you join in again. If you have questions or comments, the number to call, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page. Our Facebook page title, The Larry Mueller Show. And let's turn to Amy in Madison. Amy, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry. This is Amy. I work and have worked for many, many years exclusively at Cherokee Marsh as an environmental educator for the Madison School District. And we're used to doing lots of tours for elementary school kids and high school kids out there. And so I just wanted to put that plug in because Cherokee Marsh is a fabulous place. We've got the Yahara River that flows right through it. We've got wetlands all over the place. We've got lots of ponds so kids can do pond studies. We do aquatic insect studies in the spring, and we're all lying on belly boards, dipping in with cottage cheese containers, dipping out water, hopefully filled with lots of aquatic pond life. We work with kids kindergarten through 12th grade, and we always manage to make it accessible to whatever grade they are in. And I personally have been working as an environmental educator since 1982. And I work also with the Madison School Forest, which also provides lots of environmental education, not about ponds and wetlands, but about the forest and things like that.
Well, Amy, thank you so much, not only for calling, but for what you do.
Yeah, getting kids to fall in love with nature, whether it's wetlands, forests, or whatever, is the most fundamental thing to raising adults that care about those issues as well. So kudos to you for doing that. I have to say that Cherokee Marsh is the place that I take my school-aged children. We go out and lead frog walks with our neighborhood every spring because it's so fun to listen to all those calls. And it's right here in our community, and it's a wetland gem, Larry. It's
oh,
one
it
of 100
beautiful.
Sites that Wisconsin Wetlands Association recognized 100 different wetlands around the state a few years ago as wetland gems, as a way to, for people to find these really beautiful wetland areas in communities near them.
Do you still have those, that publication?
The publication is out of print. We've sold out, but we still have all of the information
online.
That's in those, that publication is all available on our website, wisconsinwetlands.org. It's the Wetland Gems Program, so folks can avail themselves of any of those. We have a fact sheet for each and every one of those 100 wetland gem sites around the state that gives you lots of information about what you can see and learn there.
I remember we had a lot of fun talking about it on this show. That there's some, wow, well, 100 wonderful
right,
sites,
right.
To be perfectly honest.
Well, and another one of those wetland gems is the Kikagan and Bad River Sloughs, which is located within the Bad River Tribal Reservation area
Jessica
works on. That, in addition to being a wetland gem, has also been recognized as one of very few wetlands of international importance under the Ramsar Convention, which is this global body that recognizes wetlands. And so we can talk more about that in a bit.
We will. We'll take a quick look at the news and weather and find out what else is in store for us, and then we'll be back with our guests. Stay with us. Whether it's a marsh, a bog, a swamp in Wisconsin, you and I are surrounded by wetlands, and that's a good thing. They're critical habitat for many creatures and serve important functions as natural filters, I guess you could say, for our watersheds. Larry Mueller here. And fortunately, we have some folks who educate the public and policymakers about the importance of wetlands and actively work to protect them. One of them is Katie Belfus, the Outreach Programs Director for the Wisconsin Wetlands Association. She's been a guest on the show many, many times. Katie, thanks for joining us
again. Great to be here. Thanks.
And Jessica Strand, a wetlands specialist from the Bad River Tribe's Natural Resources Department. She's from one of the groups being honored with a Wetlands Award from the Wisconsin Wetlands Association. And Jessica, thank you for taking time to be with us as well.
Thanks for having me on the show.
Appreciate it very much. And her group, you as a member of the Wisconsin Wetlands Association, are honoring Jessica and her organization.
That's right. We have an annual awards program, our Wetlands Awards, because there's so many people in Wisconsin who are doing really great things to promote and protect and restore wetlands. And we want to give a shout out to those folks to recognize how important what they're doing is and give voice to that work. So this year we are honoring a group of people who have been associated with cooperatively working together to protect and learn more about the wetlands of the Bad River watershed. That watershed runs from the Pinoki Hills up to the south, up higher, elevationally speaking, and then the watershed goes down and ends in the Lake Superior and the Bad River Reservation. So there's a bunch of folks, Bill Hart with Trout Unlimited, the Bad River Tribal Natural Resources Program that Jessica works for, the Bad River Watershed Association, a couple of folks at the Great Lakes Indian Fish and Wildlife Commission, John Coleman and Don White, and then Jim Meeker and Joan Elias. Jim, unfortunately, we lost last year, but he and his wife Joan were among people who did a lot of research and outreach about the natural resources of this watershed and wanted to recognize all of those people for their work to work together to advance our understanding of the wetlands of this watershed. Of course, the event that sort of brought all this together is the mine that was proposed for that area. Mm-hmm. However, the work that this group did was really not about fighting the mine. It was about, as Jessica said earlier, let's work together to understand the science of the resources. How do they work? How do they connect together? How are they related? How do they function? And what would something like a mine development do to how that functions and what those services that are provided?
And certainly that would have made a huge impact on wetlands in that area.
A direct impact on many wetlands, many, many wetlands, and an indirect impact, which is often some of the impacts that people forget about. Water runs downstream, and any water the way that the water functions in the watershed affects what happens downstream, and the natural resources on the reservation would have been profoundly impacted, the riverways and the wild rice beds on Lake Superior.
Yeah. We have callers online with questions. You can join in, too, with a question about wetlands or the issues surrounding wetlands. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@WPR.org, or you can post on our Facebook page. Just go to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page, and you can post your questions and your comments there. Jessica, back to you for just a minute. What would be a typical day, or what kinds of things would you be involved on a day-to-day basis in your role as a wetland specialist?
Well, Larry, it really depends on the season. In the summer, during the growing season, there's a lot of field work involved in my position, whether it's going out to do wetland delineations and to determine the boundaries of wetlands, or project reviews to look at a proposed project on the reservation and how it might be impacting the water resources, or monitoring. We do monitoring of wetland sites around the reservation, where we look at water quality and other aspects of a wetland to kind of assess how the wetlands are doing on the reservation.
And that's a beautiful place. I really envy you, Jessica, that you get to spend as much time as you do out in the field there, because I've been up there and it's phenomenally beautiful.
You're not going to get any argument from me, that's for sure. Well, it's pretty cool. Richard in Algoma has a question. Let's go there. Richard, hi. Thank you for calling.
Well, thank you for getting me on. I was wondering about some of the setback requirements that farmers are asked to adhere to. And one that caught my eye when I was reading some literature was that the requirements for spreading manure, the setback from a wetland is only 25 feet, where other setbacks, for instance, the well on the property, it's a 100-foot setback from the well, but only 25 feet away from the edge of the wetland. I'm wondering what your people think about that. Is it enough? Should it be increased to 200, 300?
Okay.
Well, that's a tough question. And, you know, these things get decided in the regulatory arena, because there has to be a number so that people have something that they can follow. But there needs to be thinking that goes along with that number. And that's where the challenge comes in. And part of it relates to what, you know, my personal opinion is, of course, we need to really protect all of our water resources and make sure that what we're doing to them is not causing a problem. However, it also depends on, you know, what under what conditions is the manure being spread, what is the vegetation adjacent to those water bodies or the wetland area, what is that manure going to be drifting through as it runs down the slope. So there's a lot of interesting questions. I think that's what we need to think through is. Are the things that we're doing negatively impacting our water resources? We have to define a limit. Sometimes there's also the balance of making sure that a farmer can make money on his property. So balancing those desires and needs, it's a challenging business, and I don't have all the answers.
Yeah, and Jessica, I bet you can think of times where 25 feet would be enough and where 200 feet wouldn't be enough.
Like Katie said, it really depends on the individual property that you're talking about and several other factors. It also depends on what the wetland's like that it's entering. Some wetlands have a greater capacity than others, but you really need to look at how often you're spreading the manure and all the factors that Katie listed off earlier.
Yeah, absolutely. Richard, thanks a lot for calling. I appreciate your call. And again, I invite you to call in at 800-642-1234. Email us at talk@WPR.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Again, we always look forward to your questions and comments. Leslie in La Crosse said there needs to be more education on wetlands so people can understand, as Leslie from La Crosse, so people can understand the environmental effects. And this should not only apply to just the average person, but our legislators as well.
And that's certainly something that our group spends a lot of time doing, both the public education and working with elected officials, not only at our state capitol, but also in local communities. Because you're right, you know, people want generally want to make good decisions for their landscape. But if they don't have the information to help them understand what some of the issues are as they make those decisions, they're not going to think about that. So we work very hard to try to make those connections. And our organization is, generally speaking, available to come and give presentations. You know, obviously there's caveats with that, but we're generally available, and we'd love to have you give us a call if you're interested.
And Bob and Kenosha, I'll give you a chance now. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, I spoke to your screener, and I was a little complicated with my question, but I own property in Forest County and noticed that over the years, areas that were not being able to be developed because of wetlands, as far as not perking and that sort of thing, all of a sudden, mysteriously, properties are being developed. And I'm wondering, just simply put, is it just getting looser on following the rules, or are people just looking the other way?
Well, statewide, our regulations have changed over the years, and some people would say that it's easier now to get a permit to fill a wetland than it was historically. There still is the same essential core process, which is that the regulators, at least at the state level, work with the project proponent to figure out ways to avoid wetland impacts. Second, to mitigate any impacts and minimize any impacts that might happen as a result of the project. And the last opportunity is a thing called wetland mitigation, which is if you fill a wetland in one area, you have to then restore a wetland in another area to compensate for that loss. That's a very, that needs to be the sort of last choice option, because we don't make wetlands the way Mother Nature did. And obviously, if we lose wetlands from position A and put them back in position B, they're going to do different things. So the services that were provided in position A are no longer going to be there. So that's the general process. And it also is not just a state or federal issue. It also can be a local issue, and local communities can and do have the authority to also limit or restrict some of that development, or put it in their planning so that they have identified certain areas where development's not going to be appropriate. Every case is unique, and so I can't comment on what you're seeing in Forest County there, but certainly it's something to ask about and to ask your community, what's going on here? Why are they, you know, what's happening? And if there's a gap in your community's planning, let's address that.
Yeah.
I think the last one is probably more, you know, as far as on a local side, I think local communities are seeing as more tax money come in, and and I'm just guessing, but more people saying, well, it's old swampland, who cares? So that's kind of
And that's a very pervasive attitude. I mean, you even look at our language, we say things like, I'm swamped. That's never a good thing, right? It's never a good thing to be swamped or bogged down. Those are pejorative words that we tie into wetlands because they have such a bad rap historically. But they're super important, and the more, as people realize that, the more they are interested in seeing them protected.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. You know, I hadn't even thought of that terminology, swamped or bogged down.
Yeah. It's always bad, isn't it? So, but we actually, in our office, we don't let people say swamped or bogged down anymore. We say paved over. Just to pay attention to that in our language.
Well, I have been bogged down in bogs.
Well, that's true, and that's a whole different thing, right?
I can tell you that for sure.
Yeah.
Oh, man. You can join in, too, the number 1-800-642-1234. What kind of help does the Wisconsin Wetlands Association offer to people with wetlands?
Sure. Well, as we have a private landowner program, so that folks who own wetlands and want to learn more how to figure out what they have and whether it's healthy or not and how they can take care of it. We have a program for that. We have a publication. We have a lot of website resources. And sometimes we're able to come in and offer trainings in a particular area for landowners who are interested in that. We also work with local governments, as I alluded to earlier. And again, that's an education and training for the most part. We have field-based workshops for folks who are making local project decisions at a county level to help them better understand when they're out on a landscape to know if what they're looking at is wetlands or not, and how that piece of land might be part of what's going on in their watershed to help them make better decisions. Because as I said at the beginning of the show, not all wetlands are wet all the time, and a lot of people don't think of places that have trees as wetlands, but they can be.
Yeah, they can be. Jessica, do you offer services, those kinds of services as well, or is that not really part of your position?
Well, it kind of comes down to time. We would love to do some more educational outreach on the reservation, but there are so many things that have us paved over that we sometimes don't have the time to, but I've attended some of the trainings that WWA has put on in our area up here, and it is just a great resource to have an organization like WWA where they have the time to reach out and do those educational trainings for the people that are interested.
Absolutely. Good points. Leslie in Granger, Minnesota has a comment for us, so let's go there. Leslie, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi. I've been listening to the program, and it's wonderful, but I think to give a little picture of what actually happens when the wetlands disappear, I can kind of paint a little picture by just saying what I've seen for the 25 years that I've been canoeing on my little river. It's a river that flows into the Mississippi. And 25 years ago, we could canoe the whole way, and it would be grassy on the banks. And, you know, you could get out anywhere into grass. And now, oh, man, it's, and we're guilty of it. We farm, and we've had our fields tiled. But we also have a lot of riparian plantings and stuff, so we're not really a big problem. But since farming, everybody wants to gain so much land to farm, they take out all the edging to the river and farm every square inch. So when it rains, the rain doesn't have that buffer to get into and soak into the ground slowly. So now the water races to the river. It just races, and the river will flash flood, come way up, and the force of that water just rips through everything. So that now the edges of the river are all dirt, you know, so many places. Not all dirt, of course, but on the curves. And it just, it's so much more erosion, which in turn dumps all that dirt, silt, into the river and affects things downstream for quality and all that. And also all those fields where they dump all that manure on, that is racing into the river. And I don't care what anybody says. If there isn't enough buffer between that field and the river, it's going to go in the river. So it's a problem that I don't think anybody really realizes who doesn't actually get in the river and see what's happening to the bank. So It's so important that people and legislators learn what is happening and what erosion problems cause.
Well,
because we're missing so much of the wetlands to stop that big flow into the river.
Yeah. Leslie, thanks for calling. And Katie, a comment from
you? I don't think I could have said it better. That's the way she put the pieces together. And I think it's that little famous saying about how you can take a pieces of an airplane off, and you never know when that last critical piece is going to be. Sometimes we can make small individual changes that don't seem to have a big impact, but collectively they do. And so we need to have a collective way that we're looking at those impacts and reversing some of the problems.
Kind of to go, and thanks again, Leslie, kind of to go along with it, we had a Facebook comment from Joan who says, now she lives near Cedarburg. She said there's a local farmer here who drills liquid manure up to a wetland. It overflows into the wetland, and the wetland borders a branch of the Milwaukee River. Who monitors this, and how do you?
And I'm gonna have to take a pass on that one and ask Joan to give our office a call so that we can get her that information. I just don't know it off the top of my head because it's not my area of work. But there ought to be someone that you can call to at least find out whether that's something that's appropriate and find out why it's appropriate. It doesn't seem like it should be.
No, it doesn't. So, and you're to get in touch with you. Of course, we have a link on our Facebook page, but at the Larry Mueller Show. But what's your number?
Sure, our phone number is 608-250-9971. We also have our website, wisconsinwetlands.org.
Wisconsinwetlands.org, and you can go right there and link in. Well, let's go back to the awards for a minute, because we really haven't talked a whole lot, and certainly it sounds like Jessica's group.
All of those folks have been really working together on behalf of the Bad River Watershed in a phenomenal way, and we're very, very pleased. I should say there's another individual not associated with that group of people who is also getting an award. His name is Travis Olson, and he works with the Wisconsin Coastal Management Program and has done just a phenomenal amount of work connecting people with information to better protect wetland resources in their community. So just wanted to give a shout-out to Travis because he's done some great work. The event where we've honored... We've told these people they're getting these awards, and we're having a big party because that's what you got to do when you do awards programs, right? So Thursday, November 5th in Madison at the UW Arboretum Visitor Center at 6:30, we'll have a big celebration, and we invite anybody who's interested to come on over. It is a ticketed event, and you can find information about that on our website, wisconsinwetlands.org.
And we're, boy, now that's a pretty place.
Oh, the Arboretum is lovely. Yeah.
And that visitor center.
And right now, the colors are phenomenal.
Yeah, I would get over there before dark.
Mm-hmm.
I'd definitely get over there before dark if I was going to do it. So, again, just go to your website if you want to.
Yep. To learn more about the event and buy tickets.
And Jessica, your group's, I imagine it's kind of a cool thing to get this award.
It really is. It's quite an honor, and it's nice to have that recognition of how we and the other organizations in the area have really worked together to promote the wetlands.
I think it's just great. And Katie, just in the last, we got about a minute to go. As we look ahead here to what the Wisconsin Wetlands Association is up to. Talk a little bit more about that.
Sure. Well, we're gearing up for our annual conference, which happens in February each year. This year, we'll be hosting it in Green Bay. I was up there yesterday, and we've got a really great program coming together for that. Maybe we'll be back on the show to talk about a little bit there. And we're going to continue our work with local governments and private landowners and giving presentations throughout the winter months.
So that sounds like a lot of fun.
Never a dull moment. It's always something happening, and we're really glad to be able to have the chance to do this important work.
And thank you so much for being with us today. I really appreciate it. It's always a lot of fun.
Yeah, I agree. Thanks so much.
And Jessica, thank you very much for taking time to be with us today, and congratulations on your award.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, I appreciate it very much. Jessica Strand is a wetland specialist. She works with the Bad River Tribe's Natural Resources Department, which is one of the groups being honored by the Wetlands with a Wetlands Award from the Wisconsin Wetlands Association. Of course, Katie Belfus is the Outreach Programs Director for the Wisconsin Wetlands Association. And go online to our website. At the Larry Mueller Show, you can connect with it right there. But what's your website again? How do you get
it's
there?
It's wisconsinwetlands.org.
So wisconsinwetlands.org. And we also have the website for the Bad River Tribe's Natural Resources Department up there as well. So great to have them both here with us today. And I'm sure Katie, and probably Jessica, but for sure Katie will be back in another whatever month or two, and we'll talk with her again.
It's always fun. We always learn something new.
And just to take a look at what's coming up tomorrow on the program, I just finished a book. It's a mystery. It's called Doc's Codicil, and we'll be talking with the author of that. So that's at 11 o'clock, and then at 11:45, we're going to learn about the health benefits of philanthropy in a book. It's called Simple Giving. And think about the Wisconsin Wetlands Association when you think about that as well. And thanks for listening. Stay with us.